Welcome to the Unsweetened SIO podcast. My name is Siobhan Harris. I am a certified integrative nutrition health coach and the founder of unsweetenedsio.com. I gave up all sugar and all flour on January 13th, 2018, and am finally free of my addiction. My mission is to help other sugar addicts find their path to freedom and live the sweet life without sugar. Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 167 of Unsweetened SIO, the podcast. Really excited about today's guest, Zipporah Livnay. Zippy, also known as, is a nurse and certified food addiction counselor. She is licensed in the Sugar Food Addiction Assessment Tool, SUGAR, and is the creator of the GPS program that teaches people how to live in recovery from sugar and ultra-processed food addiction. She herself struggled for many years with obesity and sugar addiction and has been living in recovery and helping others do so for over 25 years. After learning about the science of food addiction and traveling the globe to train with the world leaders in this field, Zippy left her management career in the pharmaceutical industry and now commits her time to helping people detox and recover from sugar food addiction through her GPS program, lecturing to healthcare professionals and the public about the addictive nature of ultra-processed foods, teaching and advancing research for recognition of food addiction. And she's also the co-founder and co-chair of the first International Food Addiction Professionals Network, together with Molly Painshop. Zippy lives in Israel and works with clients online from around the world. She does one-on-one counseling, group workshops, retreats, and a unique GPS program for couples. Can't wait to talk about all of that. So welcome, Zippy. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Siobhan. Wow, that introduction sounds so impressive. Who's that lady?
I know, it is super impressive. And
when I hear it like that, okay. So thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Yes, I'm so excited to talk and hear your story. So that's where I want to start, is just, you know, and especially like being in recovery now for over 25 years, there's just not many people that can say that. So that is so amazing. So tell us a little bit about your own journey and recovery.
Okay, so first of all, ever since I can remember myself, and from stories that I've been told about even before that, I've had a fatal attraction to sugar. There was never ever enough candy that could suffice for me. And if I got sweets or junk food, I had to finish it all. It didn't matter how much was there. I could never save anything for tomorrow. I stole money from my mom's wallet to go buy, food like candy at the shop and stuff. And here's the thing also, I live in Israel today. I grew up in a Jewish Orthodox home. My father actually is a rabbi, and he was the religious leader of a community. Like, I was like, you know, the priest's daughter, the rabbi's daughter. I was the rabbi's daughter. And I believed in, you know, that we ate kosher, which meant that there were a lot of candies that were considered, that I wasn't allowed to eat them because they were not kosher as far as we were concerned. And I believed in Judaism. I wasn't a rebellious kid or anything like that. But when it came to candy, man, I would beeline straight for exactly those chocolate bars and snacks that my dad said, you're not allowed to eat them. You know, so it was like even God could not come between me and my candy. So
I love this. I just have to interrupt because I'm like nodding along like, yes, but I've never heard someone call it a fatal attraction to sugar like that. I'm going to start using that because that summarizes it so perfectly. So thank you and continue.
So, but I wasn't a fat child. And as a teenager, I was like pleasantly plump, you like what they call, you know, like I maybe, and there were a lot of very mixed and inconsistent messages about food and weight loss and dieting and body image in my home, which I'm certain didn't help. But you know, I have siblings who are not addicted to food. So, you know, obviously, but my mom didn't have, we didn't have a lot of junk food in the house, almost none. And I always thought that, you know, I had a deprived childhood because of it. But actually today I can say that I thank my mom for that, because if there had been, I would have had include like the sufferings of an obese child, because it was only the junk food that interested me. Real food never did. But after I got married, and I married a wonderful man who couldn't care less what I weigh or what I eat, and I started, you know, and I was buying for myself the stuff from the store. So I would buy a lot of junk and I would eat it. I would buy it for the guests, and no guests ever saw that junk food. It was all eaten by me. And then they say that, you know, addiction is a disease that is progressive. And that's absolutely true for me, because what happened was, from maybe like once in a while going overboard, it was true binges, which it started becoming more and more often. And eventually, of course, I gained weight. And when I was 32, a young mother of three, and I was bordering obesity, I was a nurse in a clinic. I always joke, of course I joke, that I could have taught a nutrition, you know, I could have taught a dietitian what's good nutrition. I knew exactly what I should be doing and the caloric content of every chocolate bar I put in my mouth. And yet I just could not stop. And it got to the point where not only was I binging 2 to 3 times a week, let's say, but I was just constantly eating. I was already eating anything that came my way. I never felt hungry. I never felt full. I just felt like I need to eat something all the time. And then, this new doctor came to the clinic who told me that she had lost 20 kilo. I don't know what that is in pounds, Siobhan. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to do that. And about like maybe like 50 pounds, something mm-hmm. like that, by treating her overeating as a food addiction, like as addiction. And it was like somebody turned a light bulb on in my head. I was like, wow, that's me. I'm a junk food junkie. And once I started looking for the solution to my problem, not to the problem of that I need to lose weight, but to the problem that I have an addiction and maybe I need to treat that. That's when I finally found a solution and I was able to lose weight and keep it off for long term. So I eventually found my solution in a 12-step program, which is like peer support, right? There was no professional there or anything, but I really started recovering. And here's the, I say that I've been in recovery for 25 years, but this has not been, and this is an important message for me to people who are addicted to food, because it was those 25 years of recovery have not been back-to-back abstinence. Okay. I believe, and I do my utmost to abstain from the foods that are my drug foods. And I can say now that, you know, after learning the science of food addiction, that so helped my own personal recovery, that it's been now 7 or 8 years where I've had no added sugar or flour unintentionally, you know what I mean? White flour, junk food, hyper-processed foods for about 7 years now. That like straight, but to say that I never have slips or slides or I never relapsed would be an absolute lie. My abstinence is not perfect. My recovery is not perfect, but it is recovery and I keep moving forward. And this is one of the very important messages to people who feel that they're struggling with food addiction or sugar addiction, because relapse is part of the, it doesn't have to happen. And I do know people who have long-term abstinence, but most of the people that I know have relapsed or slipped or slid. And it's sometimes a part, you know, that's a part of the disease called addiction. And so we have to know to recognize that and know how to get back on track, rather than just if somebody has a slip or even a relapse. My main message to them is that doesn't mean everything's all over. It just means you gotta get up, brush off the dust and keep moving. And keep going. I
love that so much. I'm really glad that you're pointing that out, because I consider that too. I know there's some programs that's like, any kind of lapse. It's like starting over at day one. And that really felt, that feels like too much for me. So yes, I feel like I'm almost 5 years, but yes, in my recovery. So there's going to be some, you know, relapse or slips or whatever built into that. And I still think that counts though. You don't have to restart is what I tell clients that tell me, oh my gosh, I slipped. And it's like, no, you still have whatever the time is, because it's all part of the bigger journey here. And there's always a learning, you know, something that we're learning from, and that's what counts. You know, when we learn from the relapses, that just adds to our journey. So I love that. I think we're, and I love your story so much. I was like nodding my head along to everything. So let's talk. And I know relapse is a really important, you know, message you wanted to talk about today, or some people call it recovery protection. Let's talk more about that, because this is the holiday season. You know, this is airing at the end of December. And you might have been trucking along just fine, and then the holiday season hits, and then you're feeling that guilt and shame and whatever again. So let's talk about that a little bit and how to navigate if you do have a relapse to help you get back on track faster.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful question, Siobhan. So what I'm going to say is I've been helping people for 25 years, but I've been doing this professionally. Like I've been learning the science and really, you know, delving into it, which helped me understand so much more, you know, about my own personal recovery and why I do the stuff I do, or how I do, you know, how is it that I can sometimes do some really crazy crap, you know, around food, or was able to, and you know, and be able to like sort of be soft on myself and forgive myself. One of my favorite things that my mentor, Beaton Janssen, who is one of the greats of food addiction.
Let's just stop and say we love Beaton Janssen so much. Love her, love her, love her. Okay. Had to just give
absolutely
her a shout out.
So she is a dear friend, colleague, and also one of the people who has most greatly influenced me on my own personal recovery journey and as a food addiction professional treating clients. And she always says, you know, it's much more interesting what your next bite is going to be than what your last bite was.
Mm-hmm. I love
and
that.
I love that so much. And every slip or slide or relapse is an opportunity for growth.
Mm.
And that's important to remember. There's a lesson there. There's something every time. And this is true. Every time that something has happened with my recovery or abstinence, there's an opportunity here to take a good, honest look at what's going on and see what I need to learn from this. What is this teaching me? Because then we can take something that bummed us out. I'm not saying it's good to relapse, and I'm not saying to say it's okay, it's okay, it's okay, right down to, you know, obsession and slavery to food and weight or whatever it is, you know, that's not what I'm saying. That's denial. Just saying, oh, that's okay. Oh, it's okay. Oh, it's okay. But taking a good, honest look at it and using it as an opportunity for growth and as an opportunity to learn. Mm. So having said that, though, I think there's a lot we can do in, I call it relapse prevention. Okay. My program is called GPS, which I love. I love making initials for things and mnemonics for things. That's just my thing.
I love so it too. And I want to know what it stands for. So tell us.
Right. So GPS, the program GPS is basically how to create your own personal map, right? Your own personal map to recover, you're living the rest of your life in recovery from sugar, food, ultra processed food addiction, whatever you want to call it. Okay. And the GPS stands for the three major phases of this program. The G is groundwork, which is learning about addiction. So this is what I tell my clients, and I encourage people to listen to podcasts like yours and, you know, and others, you know, food junkies, read books, go watch Dr. Robert Lustig's, The Bitter Truth About Sugar, right? And educate yourself about about food addiction. What is food addiction? Because that's it's really important. And that's the groundwork is knowledge. Also, you know, learn about how to eat in a way that promotes your health, especially your metabolic health, and doesn't bring you back, right? And doesn't set you backwards. So education is a huge part. That's the groundwork. That's the base, the foundation. And then the P is for food pillars or food principles, which are the four food rules of the GPS program, which I say are, if you keep those rules will keep you in recovery and in physical recovery. Yeah. And abstinent. And the four principles are no sugar, no flour, meals, set meals, like to eat meals and live your life in between, and to learn and recognize your personal triggers, which could be foods that don't have sugar and flour in them, or behavior situations that trigger, you know, that trigger the addiction. So those are the four food principles. And I love those, always,
especially that last one, to learn, and that's so personal to everybody. It's so different for each of us. I really like that you emphasize can't say the word, the personal part of that, because, you know, it's so different for all of us. And I see that with a lot of clients I coach too. One person can eat some nuts and some people can't, you know? So that's just one example of many, but not just the food, but you're saying like other situational triggers too for people. So yes, I love that.
A big one is like having your cup of coffee with something on the side, right? Mm-hmm. A cup of coffee with something that has to go with the cup of coffee, right? And I really encourage my clients to like drink coffee, eat food. Don't do it together. Like that cup of mm-hmm. coffee with a little snack, because today it's a carrot and tomorrow it's a cookie, mm-hmm. you know? So like these conditioned behaviors, eating in front of a screen, right? Or eating it, like eating and reading. There's a lot of things, you know, that people that have personal triggers for. There's even certain situations where somebody, like I have a client, right, where she says she can eat nuts if she's at home, or if she is like on a hike, right, or she's traveling. For her, like a snack of nuts will be like the perfect go-to when, you know. But if she's at like a party and there's this like plate of nuts out, like that's it. She's toast. Like she can't do that. You know, so she knows there's certain situations where she can have a certain food and certain situations where she can't.
That's such a good example of, yeah, like it. Okay. Like one thing, even nuts being okay in certain situations, but not in others. So yeah, that's really, really such good information to learn. And sometimes we only find that out by having a little relapse or slip, and it's like, okay, that didn't work. That was an experiment that did not work for me. Yeah.
Exactly. I don't say the first few months have to be, you know, should be very clear cut rules and set rules. But afterwards, you know, people to find their own personal journey, sometimes it's a matter of, you know, trial and error. And yeah, sometimes we err, and that's how we learn what mm-hmm. we need to do. And that's okay. You know, and yes, there are certain trigger foods that are common trigger foods, which are nuts, high fat cheeses, and fruit. That's from my experience, I find. So those are ones that I tell people, be wary and, you know, be mindful what's going on with you with these foods. Then the S in the GPS program is for strategies and actions. That's like the inner talk, the technical things needed to do to stay in recovery, the actions that are needed, the mindset needed to really make this a life change and a way of life rather than just some diet, low carb diet or no sugar diet, you know, that you're doing. And that's probably, you know, that's the hardest part. That's also the most important part, but it's making new habits, new inner talk, and building really like a new healthy relationship with food.
Mm-hmm.
For example, right, I think that I, if we're talking about relapse and relapse prevention, and one of the important things, especially around holiday seasons, is to remember that part of relapse prevention is something that's called harm reduction. which means that sometimes in certain situations, especially in a time like holiday season where people are going out of routine, you're being a guest, you're hosting big meals, festive meals, vacations, traveling, all this stuff that really messes with a food addict's food and brain, right? Sometimes good enough has to be good enough.
Say it again. I love it. Sometimes good enough has to be good enough.
Sometimes good enough is good enough. Mm-hmm. And I find one of the biggest things for relapse prevention is to learn to live with good enough.
I think that extends to all areas of life too. If you can just live with good enough, but yeah, so true.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I find so much from my own personal experience and my clients that, you know, the things that the changes in the relationship with food also changes that our outlook and inner talk changes the outlook and inner talk in all facets of life. Because absolutely, Siobhan, you know, these are things that we need to learn about life, but food is the first, it's the basic, mm-hmm. right? I like to quote another Molly Carmel who always says there's two relationships you can't stay, you know, that are always going to be with you. And it's the relationship with yourself and with your food, mm-hmm. right? It's going to go with you everywhere. So you can't run away from them. So building a healthy relationship with food can definitely be conducive and a great springboard to building healthy relationships with every facet of your life, people, places, and things, mm-hmm. right? So
love
yes,
it.
But definitely with food too, sometimes in situations like that, we have to like leave rigidity behind, right? And be more flexible, because if you're too rigid, you might break. But if you're flexible and you can bend a little, then you can straighten out again, mm-hmm. right? So I'm going to give an example, right? Maybe I'm going to give an example on myself is that sometimes for example, at holiday meals, I will plan to eat a little more, you know, I'm going to plan to have a big meal and enjoy it and not plan to have a big meal because, oh, I feel so guilty. I can't help it. I know I'm going to eat more. And oh, what am I going to do? No, I'm going to go and enjoy myself and maybe have some more in the knowing that I can do that. Right. I can do that.
Or you're choosing to do it.
I'm choosing to do it. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's from a place that I'm, you know what I mean? It's not a place from helplessness, but a place from this is my conscious decision to do. Or yes. There are certain foods that are processed. Okay. I'll give an example, like deli meats. Okay. I don't eat deli meats usually, especially the ones you buy in the supermarket, because it's a very processed food and it's from a health issue. It doesn't trigger my addiction, but from a health issue, it's just not a healthy food to eat. So I don't eat them. But sometimes when I'm traveling, that's the best solution there is because I eat kosher and I don't eat sugar and flour. Traveling can be very challenging. So when I travel, right, especially if it's outside of Israel. So when I travel, sometimes I will have a certain like, you know, dried sausage that I know I can eat that safely without it triggering my addiction, even though this might not be the healthiest food alive and I wouldn't necessarily eat it in other situations, right? These are certain things where, you know, or sometimes I will tell certain clients who choose to eat fruit that maybe on a maybe on a holiday, they'll choose to eat a fruit they usually don't eat, or maybe an extra fruit. They'll choose to eat certain amounts of things or certain foods. If it's a conscious decision and it's done from a place of honesty where, you know that you can do this, not like giving permission to relapse, there's a fine line and there is, or I'll give another example, right? It's happened many times and this can happen in holidays where you go to somebody's house and even maybe I called in advance and made sure everything's going to be okay. And it's not okay. You know, they said there's going to be something and they don't know. They don't get it. They don't understand. And they say, oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't in the supermarket. And now what do you do? Right. So sometimes you have to be creative, you know, It might be eating at times when, you know, eating certain times, certain amounts, certain situations, where just to be a little more flexible.
Yeah, I love that, because I travel for work. I do event work. And a lot of times I'm eating at hotels, restaurants, things way out of my, and I do the best. Like, that's why, like you said, sometimes good enough is good enough, because I just do the best that I can and just really pay attention, because sometimes I don't know what things are cooked in. Like, you know, to your point, like I try to avoid seed oils when I'm at home, but there's sometimes I know I'm probably eating things in seed oils, but I don't beat myself up over it. I'm just like, yeah, good enough is good enough right now. And the more important thing is that I make sure, because sometimes I might have sauces or stuff and I'm like, I wonder if there was a little sugar in that. And I just pay attention. Do I feel triggered? Do I want, you know, and just, and if I don't, I'm like, okay, you know, that was okay. Like, a big example for me is I really like bacon. Love bacon. And I buy the sugar-free, nitrate-free, you know, the best, highest quality bacon that I can buy. But again, when I'm at a restaurant, I'll eat it. Do I think it's the best highlight? No, probably not. But it doesn't, like, you know, it's one of those things I've been able to test. It doesn't like trigger me or anything. So yeah, I sometimes just let that stuff go, because I think, like you're saying, being too rigid, I think, and too restrictive, I think can really be a trigger for people.
And for many people, there are some people who need that restriction or need those very, very clear, you know, guidelines, because that's what keeps them on track. They have learned from trial and error that this is what they need. They go to a restaurant with their scale. I respect that. You know, if that's what you need to do is to stay in recovery, do it. Do what you need to do. And this comes exactly to the other side of that coin, right? Which is know your hard no's, right? Because if something is a hard no, if it's a red light, right? If it's a red light food, if this is a food that you know triggers you, then, you know, come hell or high water, don't, you know, that do your absolute utmost best not to eat it. And there's, you know, just because it's holidays, your addiction is not going on holiday just because you're on holiday. You know, it's there with you, to going in your suitcases, to your friends, to the whatever, the restaurant, it's wherever it is, it's coming with you.
And so, even all those family members and friends that are like, it's okay, you're on vacation. Like, they don't get it. It's not okay. So, yeah.
I always say, you know, like, I understand that, you know, I always say, like, food addicts die with two cars in their garage, right? Because this is like, it's sort of like, it's food and yes, and what do I get? There's so many personal and blurred lines that you have to learn. But also, you know, giving up sugar and hyper-processed food today is like quitting smoking in the 40s. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like somehow the cult, and this isn't somehow, okay? It's not by accident. Our food culture has become, and look, listen, when I say it this way, how absurd is this? That it's not healthy to eat only healthy food. Mm-hmm. That's what people have been brainwashed to think. That to eat only healthy food is not healthy. It's restrictive. Right. And, you know, restraint and not eating foods that cause me to lose control is the absolutely most healthy thing I can do. But it's like not normal to eat only food that human beings ate. That was the only thing that human beings ate until 100 and something years ago.
Mm-hmm. You know, and this is where it comes down to. So that bio individuality piece, like, everyone's journey is going to look so different. Everyone's food plan is going to look so different. And it's really experimenting and finding what is best for you, you know, with that curiosity and open mind and experimentation and finding, like, I love that the S of your GPS is that, you know, strategies. I would even add, like, sustainability strategies, add another S, because that's what makes it sustainable for you. If you're too restrictive and rigid, I don't think that's sustainable. Or if I'm trying to follow Zippy's plan because that's what works for Zippy, that's not maybe what works for Siobhan. You have to find your own way. Yeah.
Right. You have to find your own way. For some people, their own way is very, very set, clear limits. That's great. Do what works. For some people, though, that means that that will set them up for failure. And you have to, and yes, it does take time and trial and error, figuring it out and trying different things to know. But having said that, if it's clear to you what your hard no's are, then it's a hard no. Like for me, if I coach, you know, like you talk about bacon, I'm sure if I didn't eat kosher, right? If I ate pork and ham, or which I don't because I'm, you know, because I am an observant Jew, I'm sure that I would love bacon. I am. I'm sure of it. Absolutely. I have no idea. And when I see people eating it, I look at it and I say, that looks really, really good. Okay. But it never occurs to me to try bacon. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen. Right. Mm-hmm. There's been this one big decision that I, for reasons of belief, do not eat bacon, mm-hmm. period. It's not something that's under, this is not up for discussion in my head. Right. It's not going to happen. And I don't really have to think about it. I don't have to make any kind of effort to like not eat bacon, mm-hmm. because this is a done deal, right? Yeah. And I'm happy to say that it took years for me to get to this place, but that's where I am when it comes to chocolates and junk and cakes and cookies and all that stuff. It's just, it's not there. It's not, I mean, I see people eating desserts. I'm sure it's very delicious. I know it is. I tasted it. You know what I mean? But for me, what I have gained from my recovery, right, is so much more precious and important to me than a piece of cake or a bite of something. And I do not want to sacrifice that. And that's why I, you know, for me, that's, there's no decision there. It's a hard no. There, I made one huge decision. That is not, that I'm giving those up, that I'm giving those up in order to have every other facet of my life better.
Yep. And I agree with that. I was just going to say before you said that, when I was just thinking the same thing. For me, sugar and flour, hard no now. Like effortless though, you know, even like we're in the beginning, I had to retrain myself on like one of my mantras was, I don't do that anymore. I just don't. And now that's just second nature. I don't do that. And, you know, kind of back with relapse, and I keep like hinting to my audience here, because I had, you know, a slight relapse, you know, a few months ago, and I am going to talk about it, really address it in an upcoming episode in detail, but it doesn't have to be a sugar and flour relapse, right? Like, I just want to address that. It can be behaviors, addictive behaviors. So for me, I was snacking more and eating more. Like, I do eat popcorn and tortilla chips without flour, and have always been able to do that in moderation, but suddenly wasn't able to. I was eating them like every day and thinking about them and then beating myself up for eating it and feeling bad. So a lot of this old thinking was coming back that I thought I was free from. And, you know, a big lesson learned there too was that we need to hold that recovery close, because even almost 5 years in of, you know, doing really well, things can happen in our lives that test that a little bit. And that little sugar red dog, you know, Bitten calls the red dog, was right there, you know, and knowing that sugar and flour are hard, no, I never even thought, nope, I'm not going to pick up that, but there's trying to get in me with other things, you know? And one of those things when you're talking about fruit, also another thing was bananas. Like, I don't do well with bananas. I can eat other fruit or give up. It doesn't matter to me. I'll eat it once in a while, but bananas were kind of calling my name. And suddenly I was having a banana every day. And most people would be like, so what? You're having one banana every day. It's not like I was eating six bananas, but the way that it made me feel. And, you know, so that's the other thing, is sometimes we have these relapses. I don't know, maybe you can talk about that a little bit, like the behavioral relapse. It doesn't mean that I ate a piece of cake, because that is a hard no, effortless no. Yes, I agree. I'm looking at it and like, I know that tastes really good. But I also tell myself, I have had more cake than most like people, if they live to be 120, ever had in my 38 years of eating sugar and flour. When I did, I had more than most people have in a lifetime, thanks to my binging.
I totally identify.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. Same. But yeah. So I'm going to say yes, behaviors. You know, I think that the ultimate litmus test for that is, do I have peace of mind, yes, around the food?
I right? did not.
And
have
if a banana
peace of
is
mind.
robbing me of my peace of mind, then it's not worth it. You know what I mean? Then it's just not worth it. That's how I see it. But I am going to say, I'm going to give a little thing from the GPS program is part of the relapse prevention is putting on your superpower cape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The cape, CAPE, is a mnemonic
for, of course.
Of course, for four things that can really, really help prevent relapses, especially during the holidays.
Oh, I love it. Let's do it.
The first thing is the C is community and communication, which means making sure that you are in touch, you belong to a community, maybe of like-minded people, like a Facebook group, 12-step group, your own little group, support group. There's so much online now that's for free, or communicating with people who are supportive of the way of your way, this way of life that you have chosen. So that's the C. The A is, I always forget the A. hold on a second.
I'm going to say something about action, but yeah, I just want to say while you're looking that up, for the community and communication piece, I just have an emotion code client that reached out to me who's also an addict. And she's like, can you do some individual coaching with me just to get me through the holidays? This is my first holiday season being sugar and flour free. And I want to protect my, you know, recovery. And I know that there's going to be triggers that I'm not even aware of. And I'm like, what a gift, and how smart of her to think about that and then reach out to me for help. So we're going to do that. I'm just going to be kind of a weekly accountability and day to day too, but really now she has that and feels that community and communication, I think, is so critical, like you're saying. So reach out if you are feeling like you need that extra support, because there's so many groups now out there. That's the beauty of being an addict right now, is I feel like there's so many resources out there for people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's the first thing is like the community and the connection. And the A is, yes, the A is the I'm sorry, I'm blacking out. But the let's go to the P. The P is preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I always, or planning would be more maybe exact, planning, because I you know, in 12-step programs, sometimes they say, you know, food addiction 12-step programs, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. You know, I don't like that because it's a very negative, I find it a very negative and like punitive sentence sort of thing. But I do say that if you're planning to succeed, you will succeed to plan.
Mm-hmm, I like that.
And planning. So that has to, that is one of the most important things, I think, for relapse prevention is really preparing and planning ahead, because we live in such a toxic environment when it comes to food addiction. Like we really live in a very obesogenic environment. And I said, you know, if you would say, I quit smoking, everybody would go, yay, Siobhan, I quit drinking. Hooray, Siobhan, I quit sugar and flour. What?
Why would you do that?
Why would you do that? It's so extreme. Yeah. You know what I know? It's like, you know, enjoy life a little, you know, and all that stuff. So it's really not so planning and preparing in advance and having, you know, your emergency rations with you when you travel and knowing where you're going and if you're going to have food there, you know, that's right for you. And if not, bring it with you.
Yeah.
You know, and all that, you know, I say that, you know, so that's definitely part of it. And E is for environment, which is, you know, lowering as much as you can the stimulation for addictive foods and addictive eating. I mean, we can't change what's being on commercials on television or what's, you know, on billboards in the street, but in our own homes, right? I say you don't have to bring your kryptonite home, right? Those foods that weaken your resolve and your power and your, and you know, and we're always like we have an addiction that we constantly have to be sort of defending ourselves against, you know, this stimulation. Somebody who does drugs doesn't have to go to a party, you know, it doesn't have to be near people who are smoking or doing drugs or whatever. They can, but we can't isolate ourselves from people who are eating cake, like, you know what I mean? So what I say is that at least though the places where you can at home, right? So that would mean maybe not having your kryptonite foods at home, and your family definitely prefers you happy and healthy than any kind of snack or treat that you know, or sweets or whatever it is to have in the house. And sometimes that's what's in the balance here. Or for example, if there are foods that are there, make sure they're not out on the counter, that they're in like closed packages and in the pantry, not at eye level, like, you know, on the high shelf, low shelf, in the back of the freezer, whatever, wherever it needs to be, you know.
And so, another tip, I'm just thinking for the environment thing, is what I did, and I still do sometimes, but especially the first holiday season, when it came for dessert, say I was at a family gathering, it was dessert time, I would excuse myself and start doing the dishes in the kitchen because I had to remove myself from that environment. People understood. And then I was helping by doing dishes. So, you know, people weren't as offended. Oh, Siobhan's not having dessert. Oh, but she's doing the dishes. Let's let her be. So that I think is a really good one to do. Absolutely. Removing yourself when you can, or excuse yourself and go to the bathroom or whatever. But sometimes very much in the beginning, I had to do that.
Sometimes just moving your chair a few inches from the table so that the food isn't within arm's reach. Sometimes that's enough.
Mm-hmm.
Just sitting a little further away from the table or moving to the couch, you know, it can be enough. And the A, I finally remembered what
yes,
A
is for A.
Back to A. So C is community, communication. A is accountability.
Ah, big one, yeah.
Big one, right? Because if I, you know, if I really commit to somebody, or I'm honest with someone, and it's just not just me and my own sick head, then that's a huge thing in relapse. So it's communication and right, communication and community, accountability, planning and preparation, and environment, and making as safe an environment as possible. So that's your superpower, Kate.
I love it. I love all these. And I love those too. It's just so much easier to remember things that way. So we don't have a ton of time left, and I'm so glad we got to talk through relapse prevention. But another topic we did want to talk about was New Year's resolutions. So I want to transition there, because again, this is going to post at the end of December, and it's our, you know, time of year to make New Year's resolutions. So I want you, Zippy, to talk to us about your thoughts on New Year's resolutions. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, and we're very similar. So I'm happy for you to kind of reinforce it.
Great. So, you know, I every week I put out a live on my Facebook page, GPS to Sugar Free. You can guys can check me out. It's also on my YouTube channel under the same name. Every week I do a live on Mondays at 7 p.m. Israel time, which is GMT plus 2. And one of my favorite podcasts was, if you wanna, the best way to diet is to stop dieting. Right? The best way to lose weight is to stop dieting.
Yeah.
If it's a diet, it's like poor me, and I'm just waiting for this to get, you know, finished. And the best way to move ahead in your year and meet your goals is to stop making New Year's resolutions. That's my take on it. Same thing.
A
New Year's
it.
Resolution is like, you know, it's like this sort of wishful thinking that people sort of decide, like, this is what they should be doing. This is what should happen this year. And then reality sets in, and like, nothing is nothing. So what I say is, you know, do your best. I'm not saying that it's a bad idea to make goals. That's not what I'm saying. But I think there's a difference between setting goals and making New Year's resolutions where, again, it's like that flexibility thing, right? Because mm-hmm. if I make a resolution and then I didn't, did I keep it? Did I not keep it? Am I a good girl, bad girl? I think it sort of invites this like perfectionism, rigidity, being hard on yourself conversations.
And everyone says, like, that's like a well-known statistic. I don't know exactly what it is, but like 90% of people within like 2 weeks in January have already like failed with their New Year's resolution. So
exactly.
Yeah, that's, But I was saying before we started recording, like my New Year's resolution used to always be around diet and losing weight. Even every time I made a birthday wish, like it was always about weight and losing weight. And this was going to be the year I was going to do it. And I would always get excited at Christmas time or in the holidays, like, oh, what diet book is going to be the one that fixes me? And now, you know, 5 years later, almost, that's not even on my radar at all. And what I did last year, I just want to share, because I don't know if I shared this, like last year, what I did instead of a New Year's resolution is I wrote myself a letter on New Year's Eve. And it was like, what do I, kind of summarizing big accomplishments from the past year, and what do I want to accomplish in this next year? Like knowing, and then I sealed the letter and I'm going to read it on New Year's Eve this year and reflect back and see, you know, what goals I've made. And then what do I want to do planning a year ahead? So basically like a little letter to myself from the past to, you know, future Siobhan. And I just love that instead of, you know, one singular, whatever that resolution, you know, might be, this was more goals. Like, these are the things I'd really like to have, like, you know, accomplished. But again, when I'm reading it, I'm not going to be like, oh, you didn't do that, you didn't do that. It's more like just an opportunity.
You a check. Yeah, like a check where you are. But I would encourage you to include in the letter this year, maybe, what do you wish for? What's your New Year's, you know, blessing or wish for Siobhan next year? What do you wish for her? Yeah. What?
I already have that. Yep. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
And but I do that around my birthday, because my birthday is in July. So it's nice to have like two times a year to check in. And I do birthday wishes like for the year ahead. And I used to do is like how old I was, you know, like 28 birthday wishes, 20. Now, you know, it's getting higher and higher. So I don't always make the number, but I love that as a way. Yeah. Like the wishes. So yes, I just think that's a much, again, more encouraging, setting ourselves up for success instead of failure. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, I've loved talking with you, Zippy. I can't believe we haven't connected before.
I would like to say just about what you said, that your resolutions have nothing to do with food. Isn't that freeing? Isn't that wonderful?
It feels like, I feel like that's a miracle, because literally since I started dieting at age like 14 or 15 or whatever, that was always my wish. And I'm one of those people too, like if I see the clock and it's 11:11, I'll make a wish. So on a shooting star, anytime there was an opportunity for a wish, it was around food. And now that is nothing to do. I mean, yes, that is the biggest gift of all. I still can't even believe that that's true.
Exactly. And it has nothing to do with weight.
Nothing. Even though, again, I say this all the time, that was my original motivator, was weight. And that, yes, I've lost weight, but that's like, as far as the top benefits, that's not even in the top like eight. Like that's just a pleasant side effect. You know, there's so many other amazing things, but I understand when you're in the beginning, it's like, I don't care, Siobhan and Zippy, I need to lose weight. But that changes once we get rid of that, you know, addictive thinking. So, and that's like such a beautiful gift. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, is there any last words of advice or wisdom or anything that we didn't get to today that you wanted to share with the audience before we go?
Oh, I just would like to encourage the listeners, be soft on yourself and focus in your holidays. In the same vein of what you said, Siobhan, focus in the holidays of the good things that are happening and that you're celebrating that are not food oriented or not food related, right? What the meaning and significance of the holidays, family time together, value time together, rest, vacation, taking a break from the rat race of life, togetherness, prayer, I don't know, your spirituality, whatever it is, right? Focus on those things and not just on what am I eating and what am I not eating, and you know, and I think that can also give a lot of freedom around and a good experience around the holiday.
I couldn't agree more. And before, I didn't even enjoy the holidays, really, even when I was indulging in all those foods, because all it about was for me was what I was going to eat. Where now that's like, I don't even think about it. I just enjoy and I'm present with my family and my friends, which is really the whole point, you know, but I wasn't able to do that before. And now I'm just there in a much more present way. Yeah.
Same here. I mean, I'm Jewish, so I don't celebrate Christmas, but you know, all of, we have a lot of holidays in our religion. It's like seven holidays a year. So once every like 2 months, there's something going on, and it's always very food centered. So it really can give some focus and some, you know, some presence and an anchor to really think about the real reason for these holidays and these family get-togethers and these traveling and going to be with friends and loved ones and, you know, and what it's really, really all about. And be soft on yourselves. That's my message to your listeners, Siobhan.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for talking with us today. It's been such a pleasure. I'm so glad that you could do this.
Inviting me. Thank you. And have...
Thank you so much for listening. Have a great day. And remember, life is so much sweeter without sugar.